I think there's a serious danger of a trade war here. These steps are outside of the bounds of sort of normal trade actions.
New U.S. trade tariffs create economic anxiety. It's Monday, March 5th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, we examine a possible trade war involving China. Australia's relations with China become rocky. A Japanese photographer in Africa. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump's administration appears unbowed by broad domestic and international criticism of his planned import tariffs on steel and aluminum, saying Sunday that the president is not planning on exempting any countries from the stiff duties. White House trade advisor Peter Navarro says President Trump is not planning to exempt any countries from his increase in tariffs. Navarro told CNN that final details on Trump's anticipated 25% tax on steel imports and a 10% tariff on aluminum should be completed by later in the week or early next week at the latest. Trump's new tariffs for the key metals have drawn wide condemnation from business-oriented Republican lawmakers in the United States, as well as key allied trading partners Canada and the European Union. But Navarro said the tariffs are needed to protect our national security and economic security, broadly defined. He dismissed concerns from Defense Department officials who voiced support for targeted tariff increases aimed at specific countries, but not increases on the imported metals from throughout the world. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and he was senior economist on trade for the President's Council of Economic Advisers in the George W. Bush administration. Levy believes the proposed Trump tariffs on steel and aluminum would start a trade war that could end up costing U.S. businesses and consumers a lot of money.
I think there's a serious danger of a trade war here. These steps are outside of the bounds of sort of normal trade actions. We have major trading partners who have threatened responses, and the president's reaction has been, then he will escalate. That certainly has all the makings of a trade war.
What would it take to escalate into a trade war? You said retaliatory action either on both, probably on both sides, right?
That's right. So I think there's no precise definition of what makes for a trade war. I think the rule of thumb one can use is when you start getting uncontrolled spirals of retaliation. So the whole trading system is set up so that if one country does something bad, then another country can file a complaint, get the right to retaliate. They retaliate once, but that's it. This is like, you know, your brother punches you, you get one punch back, you're done. It's when things start spiraling out of control and everybody escalates that you get closer to what we think of as a trade war.
The president tweeted on Saturday that the United States has an $800 billion yearly trade deficit because of our very stupid trade deals and policies, and said our jobs and wealth are being given to other countries that have taken advantage of us for years. They laugh at what fools our leaders have been. No more. What's your reaction?
I think he's got all that exactly backwards, including when they're doing the laughing at the leaders, which I think may be happening now much more than it did before. I think the president has long been fixated on the trade deficit, and he's failed to understand it. The U.S. trade deficit is not a reflection of trade policies. It's a reflection of the fact that we borrow a great deal from the rest of the world. If you are going to borrow from the rest of the world as a country, then you are going to run a trade deficit. And if anything, this president has worked to escalate our borrowing from the rest of the world with a tax bill that had a $1.5 trillion price tag attached.
The effect on the global economy could be large. Stay with VOA Asia as we continue our discussion in just a moment with Phil Levy on potential trade impacts of the new Trump tariffs in Asia. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China doesn't want trade war, but says it will respond if necessary. China defends planned scrapping of presidential term limits. High-level South Korean delegation to hold discussions with the North. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue with our look at U.S. trade and what President Trump's new tariffs announcement could mean for the world and Asia specifically. Canada is the largest U.S. trading partner. It could be hit the hardest. Since last year, it shipped $7.2 billion worth of aluminum to the United States and steel valued at $4.3 billion. The tariffs would also hit other U.S. allies, Britain, Germany, South Korea, Turkey, and Japan. But China, the world's biggest steel producer, only sends 2% of its supply to the United States and would be less affected. We continue with VOA Asia's Ira Melman's discussion with Phil Levy, a senior fellow on the global economy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and was a senior economist on trade for the President's Council of Economic Advisers in the George W. Bush administration.
This broadcast is aimed primarily to Asia. Let's talk about China a little bit, specifically when it comes to these tariffs and so far what has happened in the Trump administration as far as trade relations are concerned. Where does it stand?
Well, the one thing I will note about these tariffs and China is this is an instance in which the Trump administration took a shot at China, missed, and managed to hit all of the U.S. allies instead. So China does not even make the top 10 in terms of sources of steel imports for the U.S. Countries like Japan and Korea do. So the countries that the U.S. would be hitting, should these tariffs be applied this next week, would predominantly be our allies, both in Asia and around the world. You asked, I think, about sort of broader trade relations with China. They've been very conflicted. The administration had good summits with China. They struck an early trade deal. China was forthcoming in trying to negotiate an additional deal with Wilbur Ross over steel capacity. The president evidently turned that down last year and said he wanted to do tariffs instead. So it's been a very there's a lot of indication that China is going to be in the future the target of new U.S. trade actions on subjects like intellectual property. This particular action hits others far more than it hits China.
Well, there's also, if we go back to steel, there are things like retaliatory actions for China buying its ever-expanding air fleet from Airbus rather than Boeing, right?
That's absolutely the case. In fact, one of the stocks that you saw fall most sharply when the president made his announcement was Boeing. And your example is a perfect one because there are these discretionary purchases. And if countries want to express their irritation, they may well, when possible, choose to buy big-ticket items from someone other than a big-name brand American supplier.
What is your expectation as far as what China would take as far as retaliatory measures are concerned if these tariffs are implemented?
Well, if China does anything, they've given some indication that they will go after some farm products, things like U.S. exports of sorghum. China may decide just to sit back on this one and hold off since it will have other things to deal with coming fairly soon, and because this predominantly is the U.S. taking shots at its allies, and so China can just grab the popcorn and watch.
Phil Levy, senior fellow on the global economy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. We're glad you're starting out your week with us on VOA Asia. A high-ranking Australian diplomat has acknowledged Canberra's relationship with its largest trading partner, China, is enduring a period of complexity and difficulty. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports the candid comments from the head of the Australian Foreign Affairs Department came during a parliamentary hearing in Canberra.
Relations between Australia and China are rarely without problems or tensions. In recent months, Canberra introduced its biggest overhaul of intelligence laws in decades to try to combat foreign interference in domestic politics. While the Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull spoke of disturbing reports about Chinese influence in Australia, he has insisted the new measures were not aimed at one particular country. However, Beijing reacted with displeasure and said it had no intention of meddling in Australia's internal affairs. Those tensions still persist, according to Australia's most senior public servant. Francis Adamson, the head of Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, says the bilateral relationship is often fraught with turbulence.
Our relationship with China, there are whichever government is in power in Australia, there are periods when the Chinese are not completely in agreement with everything that we might want to do in our national interests. It's important for us to assert that.
Another area of tension is the South China Sea. Australia has always advocated for freedom of navigation in international waters in the strategic waterway. But China claims sovereignty over most of the South China Sea, including a group of small islands, directly challenging the territorial claims of its neighbours, Malaysia, Vietnam, the Philippines and Taiwan. Australian Defence Minister Maurice Payne says Canberra will continue to assert its rights in the region.
Certainly in the last 12 to 18 months, 2 years really, we've made some quite significant increase in our activity in the region. And last year, the Australian Defence Force executed the largest joint task group that we have had in decades through the region.
Canberra must tread a delicate diplomatic line between China, its largest trading partner, a relationship that's underpinned recent Australian prosperity, and its long-standing military alliance with the United States that dates back to the early 1950s. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia. This news alert from VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in will send a high-level special delegation to North Korea today to discuss ways in which relations can be improved and to ease tension on the peninsula. That mission could be complicated by planned annual military drills with the United States in April. Make your mission to visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Daichi Yamamoto is a Japanese photographer who has called Senegal his home for the past 2 years. His work captures local fashion, and he's helped launch the careers of several Senegalese fashion models. For VOA, Chika Odua gives us a more complete picture from Dakar.
With every snap, Japan native Daichi Yamamoto is reminded about what he loves most about Senegal. He moved here from New York City 2 years ago.
When I initially came to Senegal, I was very impressed with the colorful dresses, which, in the U.S., people, when I came, like people started dressing up like that kind of dress. But then here, people wear as a culture, and I was very impressed of those, rich culture. But I also, like when it comes to the photography in Africa, I see a lot of, poverty, some like kind of negative images of Africa. But then, I just wanted to focus on a positive side of Africa. This colorful dress and the fashion just really, caught my heart. All right.
A self-taught photographer, Yamamoto has carved a niche for himself with aspiring local models. His Instagram feed is a colorful collage of looks that has also drawn attention to the Senegalese fashion scene. Awa Claudine has dreamed of being an international model since she was 7 years old. She says Yamamoto's background gives him a unique aesthetic.
Daichi is a professional photographer, and he's also a foreigner. He has introduced to us a new culture and has also used his experience to make me better.
And it's not just the models who benefit from the exposure. Makeup artist Jessica Manuela says he was the only photographer who gave her a chance. Back in Senegal, Yamamoto is coaching a first-timer to pose with ease and grace. Chika Odua for VOA News, Dakar.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our program or listen to us streaming each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and also our website at voanews.com. Of course, we want to hear from you. Send us an email. voaasia@voanews.com is our address. We'd like to say hello to everybody listening via Facebook on VOA Burmese in Myanmar. Thanks for joining us today. Our thanks go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer John Ellison, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.